Post-war opportunity lost. Tharindra Gunaratne rules the lack of tangible FDI inflows. In 2009, legendary investor Jim Rogers was asked on CNBC to name his second favorite emerging market after China. His answer was Sri Lanka. When he was pressed to say why, his response was simple. If you go into a country after a 30-year war, there are astonishing opportunities. Yet today, such optimism has failed to translate into tangible results. For example, total foreign direct investment in Sri Lanka was approximately US$1.6 billion in 2017. The comparative figures for Singapore and Vietnam are $58 billion and $36 billion respectively. Throughout the past decade, FDI has contributed less than 2% to Sri Lanka's GDP, while the economies of Malaysia, Vietnam, and Singapore enjoyed a contribution of 5%, 6%, and 21% respectively in 2016. As a small country, it is impossible for Sri Lanka to reach the economic heights achieved by role models such as Singapore without the express confidence of external investors. So how can Sri Lanka convince the world that it is an attractive investment destination? Sri Lanka can begin by providing more support for global investors to set up shop on its shores. In 2009, the World Bank's Doing Business Index ranked Sri Lanka 29th in the world for starting a business. By 2018, it was ranked 77th. In 2009, starting a business in Sri Lanka involved four procedures. By 2018, this number has risen to seven. In addition to reducing the regulatory burden involved in setting up a business, Sri Lanka also needs to re-evaluate its policies related to providing work authorization for foreign citizens. Today, it is estimated that 80% of online applications for work visas in Singapore are processed within 7 working days. A typical employment pass is valid for 2 years in Singapore, compared to only 12 months in Sri Lanka. When developing a national strategy to attract FDI, Sri Lanka needs to keep in mind its limitations, the most significant of which is the fact that it is a small country compared to many regional peers. Therefore, the island's attractiveness to foreign investors lies not in its domestic market, but in its position as a gateway to the rest of the world. This is where trade agreements and double taxation treaties become extremely useful. Today, Sri Lanka has double tax agreements, DTAs, with only 44 countries compared to Singapore's 80-plus DTAs. We also need to take steps to reduce perceived risks associated with FDI in Sri Lanka. First, Sri Lanka needs to amend its outdated labor laws, which provide excessive protection to employees. For example, the Termination of Employment of Workmen Act, created almost 50 years ago, is far too rigid for Sri Lanka to remain competitive in the global arena today. It is in urgent need of revision. An important step was taken in this regard last year when the Ministry of Development Strategies and International Trade worked with the United States Agency for International Development to introduce reforms to existing labor laws. But as expected, these reforms met with stiff opposition, culminating in the Labour Minister himself stating that any changes to labour laws needed to be worker-friendly. Apart from reforming archaic labour regulations, Sri Lanka needs to ensure political stability. This is obviously no mean feat. However, attracting substantial FDI will be a pipe dream unless there is a modicum of political stability. In addition, a strong rule of law is vital, especially in enforcing contracts, settling legal disputes, and protecting minority rights. FDI remains a critical element in Sri Lanka's path towards economic prosperity. With a proper strategy in place, it may be able to convince Rogers to put his money where his mouth is.
Discover Sri Lanka, the ultimate guide to everything in Sri Lanka, from restaurants and spas to wildlife parks and historical locations. Get your hands on the latest edition, which is the only thing you'll need. Discover Sri Lanka, in stores now.